slept with someone else. He opened his mouth, then shut it again. I'm sorry, Aves, but I can't help what I did before you. Yes, you could have helped it. You could have decided not to hook up with my best friend. You could have waited for me like I did for you. Avery's vision was getting blurry. She was a little surprised with herself for bringing that up, but maybe she shouldn't have been. It was always there, a small hurt that she stubbornly kept nursing deep inside her. The knowledge that Atlas had been with Leda, probably even with other girls, while she'd only ever been with him, made Avery feel wounded and inadequate. It's just hard, seeing you with other girls after that. She finished, her voice small. That's not fair. I can't change the past. Atlas started to reach for Avery, only to think better of it, and let his hands fall helplessly to his side. There's one easy way to fix everything, Aves, and it's to leave. But you're the one who won't run away and won't tell me why. Avery shook her head. I want to. I just need... Time, yeah, I get it. Atlas snapped, interrupting her. I've tried to be understanding about it all. But how much longer am I supposed to wait? I'm sorry, she started to say, but she didn't have an answer, and he knew it. Are we ever going to run away together? Aves. Atlas seemed to falter a little. Do you even want to run away with me anymore? She blinked in shock. Of course I do, she insisted. It's just complicated. I can't explain. What can't you explain? What aren't you telling me? Avery shook her head, hating herself for keeping secrets. She swallowed against the hard, vicious sobs that rose up in her throat. I'm going to leave now. You should probably wait so that we aren't seen walking out together. You know, for appearance's sake, Atlas added, with just a touch of acid, and then he was gone. Avery wrapped her arms around herself. She realized that a few tears had escaped, probably running in dark rivulets over her makeup. She reached up brusquely to wipe at her face. The part of her that was 17 and in love felt utterly snubbed and bruised and a little bit eager to lash out. Atlas didn't get it. He couldn't understand all the pressure she was under. And aside from that one date with Watt, which anyway had ended with Avery confessing her love for Atlas, Atlas had never really seen her with another boy. He didn't understand how it was, knowing he'd been with other people, torturing herself with mental images of them together. Maybe Atlas should find out what it was like, she thought spitefully, storming back into the party with new purpose. He deserved to see how it felt, watching Avery laugh and flirt and drink and dance with someone else. Her eyes lit on Cord, standing alone near the bar, looking as aloof and handsome as ever. He was her date, after all, and he was always game for a little fun. I want a drink, she announced, leaning her elbows forward on the bar in a way that her mother would have scolded her for. But she couldn't find it in her to care about much of anything right now, except her new determination to let Atlas see how it felt. Just a little. Cord smiled at her abrupt greeting. Champagne, please, he told the bartender. But Avery shook her head. No, I want a drink. Okay, Cord said slowly, studying her a little to gauge her mood. Vodka? Atomic? Whiskey? He guessed. But Avery didn't care what she drank, as long as it was something strong. Whatever you're having, but make it a double. Cord raised an eyebrow. Two scotches on the rocks, double, he told the bartender, then glanced at Avery. Not that I don't love when you get all reckless, but can I ask what happened to prompt this? You can ask, but I won't tell you. Avery felt a few curious sets of eyes on them, but for once she didn't care who saw, didn't care whether they all posted snaps of her directly to the feeds. Let them. Well then, Cord said equitably, as if this was exactly what he'd expected her to say. How can I help? Easy. You can help me get as stupidly drunk as possible. My pleasure. Cord's ice-blue eyes danced with mischief, and Avery felt a slight uptick in her angry mood. If nothing else, she reflected, Cord was a good partner in crime. She clinked her glass to Cord's and tossed back the drink, draining it in a single gulp. It was bitter on her throat, but she didn't care. For the rest of tonight, she would be the most sparkling, unattainably gorgeous version of herself, nothing but smiles and flashing eyes, and no one would ever see how hurt she was beneath it all. Calliope. Calliope was quite pleased with her decision to come to the Hudson Conservancy Ball with Bryce Anderton. She and her mom had always loved making an entrance. The way all eyes in a room inevitably circled toward them when they arrived at a party, especially in new cities, where people wondered in hushed whispers who they were and where they'd come from. Every now and then, Elise made a half-hearted attempt at keeping a lower profile. We don't want to be too notorious. It isn't safe, she would remind Calliope, as if she didn't love the attention even more than her daughter did. By now, Calliope thought she was used to attracting that sort of attention. But she hadn't been prepared for the reaction to her and Bryce walking into the underwater ballroom together. She hoped at least some of the glances were because they looked so striking together, both of them tall and lithe and dark-haired, with haughty smiles. But she admitted to herself, with some reluctance, that Bryce was the more intriguing of the pair. Everyone's eyes kept darting toward him with undisguised interest. They all clearly knew who he was, followed his various misadventures, wondered about the new girl on his arm. And it definitely caused Atlas to take notice. Calliope had made sure to flirt with him, no thanks to Avery's inept attempts at joining the conversation, and her weird insistence on dragging Atlas away. Calliope had dealt with protective siblings and parents before, especially when she tried to con sheltered private school kids. But she had to say that Avery was one of the worst she'd ever encountered. She lifted her head with proud purpose and surveyed the underwater domain, glittering with money and status and connections. Her mom was here, too, with Nadav and his daughter, Livia. Calliope had chatted with them for a few minutes earlier. Elise kept glancing at her with raised eyebrows, clearly hoping that Calliope would take Livia off her hands so she could focus better on Nadav, but Calliope hadn't been in the mood to play nice. As far as she could tell, Livia was a pale, insipid bore, and babysitting her was a waste of Calliope's talents. She stood now with Bryce and a group of his friends. They were telling a story about an old prank, where they'd graffitied a bunch of hovers in writing you could see only on a certain contact setting. It sounded lame, but Calliope joined in their laughter anyway. She glanced over at Bryce, who was laughing too, but standing a little apart from the rest of them, with the sleek self-assurance that comes from being wealthy and drunk in a bubble at the bottom of a river. The music changed, and Bryce stepped forward to take her hand. "Dance with me," he asked, more a demand than a request. Calliope set down the drink she'd been holding for show. She was trying to keep a level head tonight, and followed. Why not flirt with Bryce a little? She definitely couldn't con him. It was too risky, given that he'd almost recognized her. Of course, Atlas was risky too, since he'd already rejected her once. But he wasn't about to blow her cover. And now that she knew how rich he was, part of Calliope was determined to steal something from him, just to say she'd conned the boy on the 1,000th floor. God, what a story it would be. Not that she could ever brag about it to anyone, except her mom. When they reached the dance floor, Bryce turned around, moving his hands confidently around her waist. Overhead, holographic jellyfish glowed like floating candles, chased by the occasional neon shark. The dappled blue light played over Bryce's features, his aristocratic nose and sharply carved cheekbones. It wasn't a face that had been made for gentle expressions. Calliope. Bryce pronounced it with that same laughing irreverence, and she wondered again how much of the truth he really knew. Tell me about London. Why? She challenged. You've probably been to London dozens of times. There's nothing I could add that would change your opinion of it.
Maybe it's not my opinion of London I'm looking to revise, but my opinion of you.
She gave a little spin to gain herself some time, letting the folds of her dress fly out around her body and then fall sculpturally behind her. Well, now I'm curious about your opinion so far.
Please. I know better than to walk into a trap like that.
Bryce pulled her nearer as the music picked up speed. Calliope wanted to retreat a step. This was too close. She could feel his heartbeat through the layers of his tux, could smell his cologne, light and just a little bit astringent. But his hand was playing idly with the zipper on the back of her dress, and her breath seemed stuck in her throat.
Since you're so curious, I went to St. Margaret's, an all-girls boarding school in Soto.
She volunteered, hoping to redirect Bryce's attention.
I have to say I'm surprised. I wouldn't have pegged you as the boarding school type.
Calliope's thoughts turned inexplicably to Justine Houghton. She'd probably spent her teenage years at a boarding school, being disciplined and monitored, while Calliope had traveled the whole world. And now she was here, spinning on an underwater dance floor, surrounded by sumptuous gowns and laughter and the unmistakable flash of diamonds. It was clear to Calliope which of them had come out on top.
I'm not really the type to do anything, she answered Bryce.
He smiled slowly, his hand skating lower down her dress.
I'm aware. You're nothing like the girls I usually meet.
I remember all the mysterious girls you meet on your travels.
As they turned slowly about the dance floor, Calliope felt the gazes of other couples brushing over them like a hand tracing down her cheek. She gave her head a vain toss, letting her hair spill over one shoulder, and bared her teeth in a smile. But then she felt Bryce's eyes on her again, and it seemed that he could read straight through every movement of her body. Her smile became less fierce.
Where do you go all the time, anyway?
She challenged. She doubted he'd traveled anywhere she hadn't also been. She was a professional.
Everywhere. I'm a walking cliché. The boy who inherits lots of money, then promptly attempts to spend it all on expensive trips and gifts to himself.
He had delivered the line with styled indifference, yet for some reason it seemed melancholy to Calliope. She wondered what he would say if he knew that she did the same thing, just with other people's money.
Why is that?
Bryce shrugged.
I guess it's what happens when you lose both parents at age 16.
Calliope's breath caught.
Oh,
she managed, a little stupidly. Why hadn't she caught that on the feeds when she'd stalked him earlier? She was losing her edge, she thought, but everything to do with Bryce was making her feel muddled and uncertain. She had a panicked sense that she'd missed a lot about him. She needed to be careful. Just then, Atlas stormed past. Calliope wavered. This was her chance. Atlas was here and alone, no Avery to interfere. It would be the work of a moment to go strike up a conversation with him, pick up their flirtation from earlier tonight. Bryce hadn't missed the way her eyes darted instantly toward the other boy.
Really? You and Fuller? I wouldn't have guessed.
He shook his head disappointedly.
I just don't understand what all you girls see in him.
Calliope summoned her most imperious look, the one she'd learned from Justine all those years ago.
"I have no idea what you're talking about," she declared.
And what did he mean by all you girls? Just how many had Atlas been involved with, exactly?
"He's too boring for you,"
Bryce went on, as if she hadn't spoken.
"Don't get me wrong, I like the guy. He's just plain vanilla, and you're so complicated."
This was exactly why she shouldn't be spending time around Bryce. He was too insightful, too careful and calculating, nowhere near emotional or naive enough to fall for a con. If anything, he was so observant that he might have already realized what she was up to. She needed to get away before it was too late.
"I don't know what you mean. Now, if you'll excuse me,"
Calliope said stiffly, and beelined in the direction she had last seen Atlas. He was standing alone at a high-top table, nursing a drink, hunched over as if to ward off anyone who might consider approaching. Calliope squared her shoulders and took a deep breath.
"Hey there,"
she murmured, sidling over.
Atlas seemed momentarily bewildered, as if he'd forgotten where he was.
Then his face broke out into that familiar, off-kilter smile, a little wider than usual.
"Calliope, how's your night been?"
"Informative," she said mysteriously. "What about yours?"
"Not what I expected."
He was still glancing down into his drink. He wasn't even looking at her, she thought in mounting frustration. And if he didn't ever look at her, how would he notice how gorgeous and alone she was, right now when he seemed to need someone most? There was only one thing to do. Calliope reached across the table for Atlas's drink and drained it in a single sip, lifting her head so that he could admire the arcing curve of her neck, letting her eyes flutter sensually closed. The drink was very strong. She set the empty glass down on the table with more force than was necessary. Atlas startled at the sound.
Well, at least something had finally gotten his attention.
"Sorry, I was thirsty."
"Clearly," Atlas replied, though he didn't sound particularly angry.
He lifted a shoulder toward the bar.
"Want a refill?"
Calliope followed as he ordered them another round of drinks, a little surprised at how quickly he worked through his second glass. She didn't remember him drinking like this in Africa. It is a party, she told herself, and yet she couldn't help wondering what was bothering him. He'd seemed so much happier over the summer. She had a feeling that something, his family probably, was holding him in New York, keeping him from ever really leaving for good, when this wasn't where he truly belonged. She shook off the sudden and uncharacteristic burst of introspection. Atlas was here now, which was all that mattered to her.
"Want to dance?" she suggested.
Atlas looked back up at her, and Calliope knew at once that something had changed. Her instincts could sense it in the air between them, like a shift in the weather, like when they'd been sitting on the ridgeback in Tanzania and night began to settle its folds around them. He didn't say anything as Calliope led him purposefully onto the dance floor. When she moved his hands onto her hips, he responded by pulling her closer, circling her back. His grip was warm on her bare skin. After a while, she whispered,
"Take me home,"
in Atlas's ear. He nodded, slowly. She took his hand and led him up the stairs. He stumbled a little, he might be drunker than she realized, and crossed the pier to hail a waiting hover. Perfect. Now she would be able to scope out their apartment, start planning what she could take from them. Maybe even take something now, without anyone noticing. She typed in the Fuller's address, watching for a reaction from Atlas. When he didn't protest, she lowered her mouth to his and reached for the buttons of his jacket in the semi-darkness, unfastening each one with a brutal, determined energy. It made her feel surprisingly vindicated, proving that the only boy who'd ever rejected her wanted her after all.
finally. It was about damn time.
Lita.
It was late. Late enough that Lita wasn't even sure whether Watt was still here. She circled the fringes of the party, clutching a pineapple cocktail so tightly that her fingers had hardened into claws around it. She hadn't even wanted this drink. But some passing waiter had handed it to her, and Lita quickly learned that there were even more waiters walking around with pitchers, refilling her fluted glass every time she took a couple of sips. She'd begun to revise her opinion of the stuff. It might be sickeningly sweet, but at least it was never empty. She reached up and touched her hair, which was falling in sweaty curls down the back of her neck. The old familiar fear was prickling at her again, the panic that no matter what she did, she would never be pretty enough, clever enough, enough enough. And on top of it was the newer, even sharper fear that someone would learn what she'd done on the roof and her life would come crashing down in a million fiery pieces. She wasn't sure why she'd gotten so upset earlier, except that Watt had been acting genuinely nice to her, and she knew it all must be an act because he hated her. How could he not? After everything she'd done to him, drugging him and tricking him and blackmailing him into attending this stupid party, he must wish he'd never met her in the first place. Like always, the thought of that night, of Eris, made Lita feel cold all over. "It's not my fault," she reminded herself, but she knew deep down that the words were a lie. It was her fault. She had pushed Eris, and now she was at a party, alone and unwanted, and maybe that was what she deserved anyway.
"There you are!" she exclaimed.
Watt was standing alone, hands behind his back as he studied one of the weird modern art installations near the exit.
"You told me to back the hell off, so I did,"
Watt pointed out logically. Lita bristled a little at the reminder of her earlier words.
"I noticed you didn't leave Avery alone," she said snidely. The dig didn't elicit the reaction she'd hoped for.
Watt just shrugged and offered her his arm, not angry at all.
"Can I take you home?"
Lita glanced around. The party was beginning to slow down. Most people still here were either too old or too young for Lita to care about, including several freshmen from school who were clearly thrilled to be at a bar without an age scanner. Her parents and Jamie had left over an hour ago. Lita tilted her head at Watt, still inexplicably determined to piss him off.
"You can take me home, but don't get any ideas," she warned.
Watt chuckled, not answering. When they finally pulled up to her apartment, he walked around the hover and chivalrously opened the door for her. Lita brushed past him and stormed up the stairs without a backward glance. She felt like the plexiglass from that damned fishbowl they'd been partying in, holding back an endless muddy torrent and about to burst from the pressure.
"Good night, Lita."
Watt started toward the hover. Before she'd even thought about it, Lita was calling him back.
"I'm sorry, where do you think you're going?"
Watt turned around.
"Home?"
he asked, as if it was a trick question.
"You don't leave until I say you can leave."
She watched in delight as the last vestiges of Watt's self-control snapped and he stormed up the steps to her, his hands clenched in anger.
"Seriously, Lita, you need to stop. What more do you want from me?"
What she wanted was an outburst, a reaction, something that she could push against. Watt was the only person in the world who knew what she'd done and would actually call her out on it, and she was sick of him playing nice when they both knew he would rather play dirty. She put her hands on his shoulders and shoved him. Watt stumbled backward, clearly shocked by the physical contact.
Finally, it felt good to do something.
The silence roared in her ears. Watt stared at her without blinking.
"You're despicable. You know that, right?"
he said slowly. Lita didn't care. She was suddenly so sick of pretending, of making her whole life one massive charade where she went to school and to parties as if nothing at all was wrong. No one even knew her anymore. Except Watt. He knew the unfathomable things she'd done, had seen the gaping black hole inside her, and for some reason that knowledge didn't bother her. "Congratulations, Watt. You know all my deepest, darkest secrets." Her voice was low and throaty. "But guess what? I know yours, too. Because we're the same, Watt, you and me. You and I are nothing alike." He stepped close, his face right up next to hers, his breath ragged. "Go to hell, Lita." The entire world was spinning, and then it was still. And without Lita knowing how it had happened, Watt's lips were on hers. She pulled him forward, his hands tangled in her hair. Lita felt like her whole body was one exposed nerve ending. She tried not to make any noise as they stumbled into the hallway, but it didn't matter. Her parents' master was on the third floor, and they wouldn't expect her to bring home a boy anyway. She'd never done it before. When they fell backward onto her bed, Watt hesitated. "I still can't stand you," he told her. His dark eyes danced with something she couldn't read. She reached behind her back to unfasten her dress, feeling like a primordial, vengeful goddess. "Like I said before, I can't stand you either. Now shut up," she told him, and put her mouth over his. Watt's skin felt warm and oddly reassuring against hers. Lita clung wordlessly to him. It was glorious and dangerous and utterly without compassion. Watt could never find out how much she needed him right now, she promised herself. The strong, clean lines of his body, the strong solidity of him, the bitter press of his anger pulling her back from the edge of the vortex. Holding her demons at bay. For just a little longer. Avery. Avery stood at the center of a group of people, Risha and Ming and a few others, their faces all seeming to float against the raucous backdrop of the dance floor. The world seemed to be tilting violently, as if the planet had spun wildly off course and the sky was beneath her feet. She had no idea how late it was. She'd been so studiously determined to ignore Atlas that she hadn't seen him leave. Instead, she'd focused all her energies on laughing and flirting and drinking. She'd had so much to drink that her laughter eventually stopped feeling forced and started feeling genuine. "Hey there." Cord's hands were on her shoulders. Avery closed her eyes against the dizzying riot of color. "I think it's time we got you home," Cord said, and Avery managed an abbreviated nod. Somehow she walked with him through the tattered remnants of the party, a smile fixed on her face. Cord held tight to her forearm as they went all the way up those steps and across the pier. Whose stupid idea had it been to have an underwater party anyway? And back into the tower, where Cord helped her into a waiting hover. "Here." He shrugged off the jacket of his tux and quickly placed it over her shoulders. Avery leaned her head back and closed her eyes. She listened to the familiar tapping as Cord entered an address on the hover's internal view screen. A frantic instinct forced her eyes open, and sure enough, there was her address on the 1,000th floor, illuminated in bright white letters as their destination. "No," she said automatically. "I don't want to go home." Cord nodded, as if it were the most normal thing in the world for Avery to refuse to go back to her own apartment. He didn't ask another question, and Avery didn't answer. She just pulled his jacket tighter around her shoulders. She felt like she might vomit. When they reached the 969th floor, Avery followed Cord into his massive living room. Her whole body was still shaking with shock, or maybe regret. Her skin felt hot and stretched tight over her body, as if her very flesh were expanding. She sank wordlessly onto the couch, her head in her hands. "Do you want a t-shirt or anything?" Cord asked, with a nod toward her heavy dress. His words broke through the stupor suffocating Avery, and she glanced around, truly seeing her surroundings for the first time. What was she doing at Cord's apartment late at night? She stood up abruptly.
"I'm sorry, I should go," she said,
only to stop in defeat. There was a reason she hadn't gone home. She didn't want to see Atlas. She couldn't face him, not yet. Cord stood there watching it all.
"Avery, what's going on?" he asked carefully.
"I can't go home. I'm..."
She fumbled to speak, but there were no words to express her feelings.
"I just can't," she finished, helplessly.
Cord was too understanding, or too polite, to press her.
"Do you want to stay here?" he offered. "You know we have plenty of guest rooms."
"Actually, yeah."
Avery was surprised to hear her voice crack. She swallowed anxiously and rubbed her hands over her arms.
"And I'd love a t-shirt if the offer still stands."
"Of course."
Cord disappeared down the hallway. Avery glanced curiously around the living room. She hadn't been to Cord's in a while, except for parties, when the space was packed with people. Of course, there was a time when she and Eris and Lita had been here constantly, with Cord and his friends. It was easiest here, with no adults to watch over them. Except for Bryce, she supposed, but he didn't really count. She remembered all the stupid things they'd done, like the time Cord pulled their gelatin shots from the rapid freezer too early, and one of them exploded up onto the ceiling in a firework of gloppy green. Or the time that they'd set up a slip-and-slide down Cord's enormous staircase, and they all ricocheted down from the second floor screaming and laughing. That had been Eris's idea, Avery remembered. She'd seen it on some hollow and wanted to recreate it, and of course they all joined in, caught up in her ineffable enthusiasm. It all seemed childish and giddy, and very long ago.
"Here,"
Cord said, returning with a neatly folded stack of clothes. Avery quickly ducked into the bathroom to change. It was funny, she thought. The shirt smelled like the normal UV wand fresh scent, but also somehow like Cord. Moments later, she emerged from the bathroom in an old school shirt and mesh shorts, her bare feet padding on the heated kitchen tiles, her hair still set in its elaborate twist, diamond studs in each ear. She knew she looked absurd, but she couldn't find it in her to care.
"I got you all set up in the blue room, the one at the base of the stairs,"
Cord told her as she returned.
"Let me know if you need anything."
"Wait,"
Avery blurted out as he started toward his room. Cord turned to look at her. She glanced hopefully at the couch.
"Any chance you want to stay up for a while?"
Just until her mind stopped whirling so frantically, until she could wipe her stupid fight with Atlas, all the pettiness between them, from her brain.
"Sure, yeah,"
he said, still watching her. Avery nestled into her old favorite corner of the couch and pulled her knees up to her chest. Cord sank down next to her, an arm's length of space between them. His bow tie was loosened, his vest unbuttoned, his sleeves rolled up to his elbows. It all cast his profile in a slightly rakish air.
"Do you want to talk about what's going on?" he asked. "Or should we watch a loud, dumb hollow instead?"
"Loud, dumb hollow. The more explosions, the better," Avery said, with an attempt at a smile.
She couldn't believe Atlas hadn't pinged her or flickered her even once. What was he doing? And why couldn't she stop thinking about him, since it hurt her so damned much?
"Loud, dumb hollow it is."
Cord waved his hands in the air to call up the on-demand menu, then turned to her, his clear blue eyes lit up with a quiet intensity. The full weight of it was almost too much for Avery to bear.
"Whatever's going on, Avery, you know I'm always here if you want to talk about it."
"Thanks."
For some reason, she had to look away from Cord, or she might cry.
The hollow screen lit up with a hover chase scene, and she stared at it gratefully, trying to lose herself in the mindless, glowing action sequence. Maybe if she focused on the confusion on the screen, she could ignore the tangled, tender mess that her life had become. Avery realized that the last time she'd been alone with Cord was months ago, when he'd told her that he and Eris had broken up. And she'd figured out that he liked someone new.
"Hey," she said, eager to think about something else. "What ended up happening with you and that girl?"
Cord blinked, clearly startled.
"You mean Rylan?"
"It didn't work out."
"Wait. Rylan Myers, who now goes to our school? You were dating her?"
The girl from the roof? How had she become so entwined in all of their lives?
"I was, until she lied to me."
Cord looked as if he wanted to be angry, but all he could call up was a wounded sort of regret. Avery knew the feeling.
"It's just hard to get past. I'm not sure how to trust her again, you know?"
"I do know." She looked away.
"Hang on."
Cord vanished down the hallway, only to return holding a tapered gold candle, covered in flecks of glitter that caught and refracted the light.
"Is that an intoxicandle?"
Avery had never burned one before. They were just normal candles, with air-transported endorphins and serotonin baked into the wax. But all candles were illegal in the tower due to the fire hazard, especially this high up, where the air was pumped with extra oxygen to compensate for the altitude.
"I thought you could use it. It used to help me when I was drunk and moody."
"I'm not moody,"
Avery cried out, and Cord laughed at her.
"Though I am pretty drunk," she admitted.
The room had stopped its slow spin, but she still felt a bizarre sense of unreality, as though none of this was quite believable.
"I can say with first-hand experience that you're moody as hell and unquestionably drunk," Cord declared.
She knew he was trying to be lighthearted, but his phrasing only heightened Avery's sadness.
"The candle was Eris's, actually," Cord went on.
"She bought it for..." He broke off awkwardly.
"No, it's okay."
For some reason it felt good talking about Eris, as if by turning to the older, more aching hurt, Avery could ignore the new one that burned in her chest.
"I like the idea of using something that was hers. She would want us to burn it."
Avery watched as Cord hunted for an old-fashioned lighter, since no bot would burn anything, not inside.
"I miss her a lot,"
she added softly, as he clicked a small flame to life and held it to the candle's taper.
"I miss her, too."
Cord glanced down. The light of the candle cast small shadows under his eyes.
"You know, if I met Eris now, I think I would be intimidated by her. She was so unapologetically original,"
Avery mused aloud, fumbling for the words.
"But we'd been friends for so long that I took her for granted."
"I can't take anyone for granted ever again," she promised herself, except that she was already losing the people she cared about. Lita hated her, Watt obviously resented her, she and Atlas were fighting, and her parents were watching her like a pair of hawks. When had all of Avery's relationships started falling apart?
"Eris's funeral didn't do her justice," Cord was saying. "It was too generic for her. She needed something spectacular, like confetti bombs or bubbles."
"Eris would have loved that."
Avery smiled and took a deep breath, letting the scent of the candle travel from her lungs all the way to the farthest corners of her body, seeping into her hair, to the tips of her fingers. It smelled like honey and toast and campfires. The hollow switched to a commercial for a new karaoke game. A silence stretched between her and Cord. The sort of easy, companionable silence that falls between two people who've known each other a long time. She nodded at the commercial.
"Why don't we ever play games like that anymore?"
"Because you're a terrible singer. Which I've never understood, given the whole genetic engineering thing."
Not fair,
Avery protested, though she secretly liked it when Cord brought up the fact that she was a custom order baby. No one else ever dared to. It's okay. There are more important things, Cord said, and there was a strange note in his voice that made her look up. At some point, she wasn't sure when, he'd shifted nearer to her, or maybe she'd been the one to move. Either way, here they were. Time seemed to stretch out like a liquid. Avery's face was so close to Cord's, and he was looking at her with that unfamiliar blue-eyed intensity. None of his usual nonchalance or sarcasm, his gaze focused and resolute. Avery couldn't breathe over the pounding of her heart. She knew she should pull away, but she didn't. She couldn't move. It was all too sudden and unexpected. She had stepped into some strange universe where Cord Anderton might lean in and kiss her. Then, suddenly, Cord was sitting back, making another teasing comment about how her singing sucked, and Avery wasn't sure what had happened, or if anything had even happened at all. Her eyes lit on the candle, which still flickered there on the table. Little pockets of happiness melted out to drift blissfully upward, beads of wax sliding down the sides to gather in golden pools at the bottom. Maybe she'd imagined the whole thing. Avery's eyes fluttered open, and she shut them again, shifting in her bed. Except that she wasn't in her bed at all. She was lying on the Anderton's couch. She sat up quickly, reaching to touch the matted knot of her hair. Her eyes frantically skimmed the room. The candle was still on the table, its flame long since guttered out. Early morning light streamed through Cord's enormous floor-to-ceiling windows. She couldn't even remember falling asleep. She and Cord had been talking about Eris, and he'd lit the candle to help her relax. That must have been when she drifted off. Her gown was right where she'd left it, draped over the back of a chair. Avery stumbled to the hallway closet where the Andertons kept self-steaming garment bags. She quickly grabbed one and tossed her dress in it, then slipped on her satin heels and muttered under her breath for a hover, already halfway out the door. At the last minute, an unbidden impulse caused her to turn back and grab the melted remains of the candle. There was still a good hour left to burn, and she had a feeling she might need it. Safe inside the hover, Avery leaned back and closed her eyes, struggling to sort through the events of the last 12 hours. She still felt hurt by her stupid fight with Atlas, but also ashamed of her immature reaction, setting out to flirt with another boy in order to irritate him. No wonder he hadn't flickered her. He must have seen her laughing and dancing, taking all those shots with Cord, then stumbling home with him at the end of the night. Her cheeks colored. What did Atlas think of her? For all she knew, he might assume that something had actually happened between her and Cord. Had it? Almost? Avery kept replaying that moment, trying to parse out what it was and what it meant. Had Cord almost kissed her? Or was it just the product of her alcohol-soaked, intoxicandled mind? Well, she thought firmly. Thank God nothing had happened in the end. The hover raced upstairs, getting ever closer to the 1,000th floor. Avery leaned forward, her head in her hands, trying to shut out the world. What would she do when she saw Atlas? Storm past him? Ignore him? Talk to him? Kiss him and tell him it'll be okay no matter what, her mind whispered to her. And she knew that it was true. She had hated seeing him flirt with Calliope, but in the cold light of day, she knew he was right. It didn't mean anything, and if it helped divert their parents' suspicions, then so be it. She loved Atlas, and nothing else really mattered. They would figure it out, she told herself, like they always did. The hover pulled up to their front door, and Avery walked inside, the dress floating alongside her in the garment bag. She started to turn left toward Atlas's room, but she heard the sound of clanging of pans and broke into an involuntary smile. She knew she looked like the definition of a walk of shame, wearing a boy's clothes and holding her silver micro-clutch. but she would explain everything the moment she saw him. "Atlas?" she called out, walking into the kitchen. "I hope you're making chili eggs." Avery's words cut off abruptly when she saw who was there, because it wasn't Atlas at all. Calliope stood at the stovetop, wearing Atlas's boxers and t-shirt. A shirt Avery had bought for him, she realized, stunned. Her feet were bare, and her riotous dark waves were piled atop her head, pinned with one of Avery's favorite clips. Calliope caught sight of Avery in the refrigerator's reflective surface and grinned.
"Good morning, sunshine. Sorry it's not Atlas's chili eggs, but I'm making toast and bacon if you want some."
Avery couldn't speak. The world was spinning again and the pain was back, far, far worse than before. Calliope turned around, holding her hands beneath the UV cleanser. Her eyes traveled up and down Avery's attire, and she winked.
"Nice outfit. Makes me feel a little less shameful, knowing I'm not the only one."
"Is that my hair clip?" Avery heard herself ask. She started to walk toward Calliope. Was she really going to pull it out of her hair? She thought wildly, watching her actions as if another person were performing them. Calliope beat her to the punch, tossing the clip on the counter.
"Sorry," Calliope said carefully, clearly aware she'd done something wrong. "I knocked on your door, but you weren't there, so I just grabbed it from your counter. I didn't have any hairbands in my purse."
Avery grabbed the clip. She had become an enormous well of grief, as if someone had shaved off the edges of her nerve endings and they were dripping raw, liquid pain into her body. Somehow, though it took every last shred of her self-control, though she knew she would pay for it all day long, she managed a tight smile and nodded at the sizzling bacon.
"It's fine. And thank you for the offer, but I'm not really hungry."
Rylan. The following week at school, Rylan sat perched on a bench at lunch, her tray balanced precariously on her lap as she took a bite of her truffled chicken sandwich. Sometimes Rylan ate with a couple of other girls from her English class. They'd asked her once a few weeks ago, and she'd come to enjoy their company. They spoke in soft voices and didn't make any demands of her outside the cafeteria. But today she'd wanted a moment to herself. She picked idly at her sandwich's orange citrus loaf, letting her mind wander. School had definitely gotten better. There were still awful parts, of course. Rylan didn't think she would ever enjoy calculus with its convoluted equations and funny-looking Greek letters, and she kept getting odd looks on the morning express lift when she stepped on board in her preppy, pleated uniform. Still, she'd grown accustomed to her routine, and at least now she could find her way around campus without help from Cord. Friday afternoon had quickly become the highlight of Rylan's week, not because of the weekend, but because of holography class. She was now that student that she and Lux used to make fun of, the one who constantly raised her hand, eager to volunteer information or ask questions. Rylan couldn't help it. She loved the class. It wasn't just Shane, though he was part of it, full of constant praise and encouragement, and giving her straight A's ever since their long editing session after school that day. She'd watched all his films by now, some of them multiple times. Rylan had found to her surprise that she loved holography. She loved that she could see the direct result of every lesson, how each new technique or idea made her work immediately cleaner and sharper and more impactful. She'd never paid so much attention in a class before. Not even the sight of Cord shifting restively in the seat in front of her could ruin it. And she couldn't stop thinking that maybe someday, if she got good enough, she could make a holo that would explain her feelings to Cord. Her words had clearly failed her, but wasn't that what holography was for? To convey the things that words failed to? Rylan stretched out her legs, curling her toes in the new black flats she'd splurged on, which were a little girly for her taste, but she couldn't handle the blisters from Chris's shoes. She glanced around at the other kids in the courtyard. A few meters away, some boys were playing a game she'd never seen, where they kicked around a small beanbag with their feet and tried to keep it from hitting the ground. A group of freshman girls, the popular ones, Ryland could tell by their shining hair and unimpressed attitudes, lounged in the nearby grass, pretending not to notice the boys, but clearly preening for their benefit. Across the way, she saw a familiar figure bobbing through the crowd. Ryland immediately sat up straighter and tossed back her head, acting just like those stupid freshman girls. Would she ever be able to see Cord Anderton without feeling a nervous twist in her stomach? He glanced up and caught her staring. Crap. She tried to look down, to pretend to be reading something on her tablet, anything, but he was coming over.
Ryland, thank God I found you. I've been looking everywhere.
She startled to attention as Shane slid onto the bench next to her. Cord had halted in his tracks and turned away. Hi, she said cautiously. Is everything okay? It wasn't even a Friday. What was Shane doing on campus? And looking for her? Shane grimaced. He was sitting very close enough for Ryland to see the stubble breaking through his swarthy skin, the way his lashes fanned out, long and damp around his sage-green eyes.
My film is a nightmare. The DP just quit, so I've had to bump up his assistant, who I'm not sure is ready. But then I don't have much of a choice. I've got barely a week before my star leaves to shoot her next hollow, he complained. Long story short, I'm in the market for a new filming assistant.
That all sounds like a mess. I'm sorry, Ryland replied.
I'm not, he said evenly, because now it means I can offer the job to you. What do you say? Will you come to L.A. with me?
What? Shane leaned forward a little, his words spilling over one another, fast and intense.
Ryland, you're an incredibly promising holography student. Sure, I could hire someone out in L.A. if all I wanted was to get the film done, but I'd also love to help start your career.
He smiled.
You've got a lot of natural talent, but there's still so much for you to learn, which is why you'd benefit from some practical experience.
You want me to quit school to come work for you? What about my scholarship? Her dazed mind thought. But Shane was already answering her unasked question.
Berkeley has a system for things like this. Hell, last year one of your classmates took a month off to go scuba in the Everglades, study the underwater biologics or something. It's a quick shoot. I've already filed it as a week-long internship. And don't worry, all your travel costs are covered by the arts department, he added.
But what would I be doing exactly?
Can I have one of those?
Shane gestured to her package of Choco Berry cookies. Ryland held it out, confused, and he grabbed one, taking an enormous bite. Then he wiped the gooey chocolate onto his jeans and spoke again.
Don't get me wrong, Ryland. Being an assistant is hard work. A lot of fetching and carrying, helping set the lighting, managing the talent. They can be difficult.
He gave a little eye roll to emphasize just how difficult.
But it's also rewarding. I started just like this back in the day. I promise it all feels worth it when you see your name in lights at the end of the film.
Ryland felt a sudden flutter in her chest. You'd put my name in the credits?
Of course I would. I do that for all my assistants.
Ryland thought guiltily of Krissa, who would be alone for an entire week. But Krissa was self-sufficient enough to handle things on her own. And Krissa would want her to go. She was so proud that Ryland was back in school and actually enjoying it. Why not? She owed herself the opportunity to at least try. What do I need to do? Shane grinned.
I already sent the paperwork to you. Just have one of your parents sign it, and we're good to go.
Actually, I don't have any parents at home. I'm a legal adult, Ryland declared. She pulled up her tablet, quickly located the file, and held her thumb to the bright blue circle to stamp the document. A moment later, the screen flashed green in approval.
You don't have any parents at home? Shane repeated, puzzled.
My mom died a couple of years ago. Since then, it's just been me and my sister. I was working the last few years. That's why I'm a little behind on academics. For once, Ryland didn't feel embarrassed admitting that. Of all people, Shane would understand. Hadn't he just said he'd worked his way up from nothing? Shane nodded.
You continue to impress me, Ryland, he said, and stood up with a smile.
He looked so young when he smiled, barely older than Ryland, with his soft features and shaggy dark curls.
If you're a legal adult, I guess I have to pay you.
Oh, you don't...
It's only minimum wage. But if you have a problem, take it up with the union,
he went on, and Ryland laughed. Thank you, she told him. He nodded, his eyes dancing.
We leave tomorrow morning on the loop. I'll send you your ticket.
The last time she'd been on one of the Hyperloop trains was with Cord, to Paris. But Ryland reminded herself not to think about that. Later that afternoon, Ryland walked into the front office for her mandatory meeting with the upper school dean. Apparently, the dean needed to personally approve every request for academic absence, even for a school-sponsored internship.
Take a seat,
the front desk attendant intoned, bored. Ryland sank onto the couch and pulled up a map of L.A. on her tablet, then began to zoom over various parts, trying to familiarize herself with the city. Not that she would probably see any of it except the film lot, she thought eagerly. She felt worlds different from the girl who'd walked in here on her first day, all anxiety and uncertainty. Now she just felt excited and curious about the week ahead.
We can't keep running into each other like this.
Cord took the seat next to her.
You can't keep stalking me like this,
Ryland retorted, her mood buoyed by her good news. Cord grinned.
If I wanted to stalk you, trust me, I could do better than the school's front office.
They both fell silent. Ryland willed herself not to look at him, to look down at her tablet, at the stupid posters on the wall with inspirational quotes and images of mountains, anything but at Cord. She lasted a full 8 seconds. When she couldn't take it anymore and turned in his direction, she caught Cord staring at her, with an expression of mingled wariness and curiosity and, she hoped, a glimmer of attraction. For a moment it seemed to Ryland that no time had passed, that it was the olden days again, back when he was deciding whether or not to trust her the first time. Back when Cord hadn't been a wealthy, arrogant boy set to inherit billions, and she hadn't been the girl who cleaned his bathrooms, but instead, somehow, they were just a boy and a girl, talking in quiet tones about the losses they had both suffered. She wondered if they would ever be that way again.
How did your fencing match go? Cord asked.
Oh, you know, I'm ruthless when it comes to fighting, Ryland teased. She'd meant it as a joke, but Cord didn't laugh, and Ryland wondered if she'd hit too close to home. After all, the things she'd said to him the night Eris died had been cruel and ruthless.
What are you here for, anyway?
He went on, after a moment. I'm here to meet with the dean. She couldn't keep the pride from her voice. I'm missing a week of school for a work-study program with Shane. I'll be a filming assistant on his new hollow.
I thought you were here on scholarship. Shouldn't you be studying, not jetting off to L.A.?
Ryland recoiled at the harsh phrasing. This is a great opportunity. It's rare that students our age get to actually work on set, get hands-on experience.
Or maybe it's a chance for Shane to get some free labor. He's not paying you, is he?
Cord said, and she was surprised by the venom in his tone.
Actually, he is.
She hated how defensive she sounded.
Well, I'm glad he's taken such a special interest in you.
Cord... Ryland broke off, not quite certain what she was about to say, but the dean's door swung open before she could answer.
Ryland Myers, sorry for the wait. Come on in,
his voice boomed. Ryland looked searchingly at Cord, feeling both saddened and hurt, but he was shaking his head.
Whatever, Ryland. God knows you don't owe me an explanation.
Have fun taking teacher's pet to a whole new level. Suddenly, Ryland's mind was able to form sentences again. Not everyone is as cynical as you are, Cord.